The Fan Morning Show, Sports at 590, The Fan, Blake Murphy, J.D. Bunkus, and maybe, did you clear concussion protocol, Ailish Forfar?
Guys, I just crunched my head into the glass wall. And
you banged it off like a bird into a skyscraper.
I smashed my head during the break.
More embarrassing than you smashing your head off the window like a baby bird was you trying to justify it by saying, oh, well, there's another pane of glass.
Glare,
did you notice how there's glass here?
Feet away from that, there's also other glass.
Did you guys behind the glass see it?
I have a goose egg.
She smashed her face. Like, I can't believe she... Of course you have a goose egg. You hit it, like I said, at 100 miles per hour.
I didn't see it.
Yeah, you didn't see the glass that was right there in a studio with glass. Amazing. That was truly incredible. So we're going to have to put something up for Ailish.
I need to go in the dark room.
Yeah.
Yeah. This room's pretty dark already.
Yeah.
But the issue here is we're going to need someone else to read your texts at 590-590. Because, I don't know if we want Ailish staring at screens right now.
This is an early throwback to some of our first shows, but when Ailish used to gatekeep concussions.
Oh, yeah, like no one else has ever had concussions.
She's had so many. I've had more concussions than you, and now, I might have just entered another one.
Now I know it's your thing. You haven't had one in a while, and you're like, you know what?
I did that on purpose.
Yeah, I need attention.
I need to take a long weekend.
Yeah, I need attention,
This is my thing. Don't anybody ever say that concussions are their thing.
We were talking about those people who do wild stuff on the plane before the break, and Ailish is like, bang your head on the window. Be like, oh no, I was asleep. Someone pay attention to me.
It's the Fan Morning Show, JD Blake and Ailish. Send us your texts, 590-590. We'll answer some of your questions about last night's game, some of your takes, some of your theories. We'll hit on some Blue Jays in this hour. I have a thought on Leafs Lightning tonight. We have Dave Vanderchuk later in the show, which is cool. So we'll set the game up with him at 9:35. Grange at 8 o'clock. And Tim Bontemps, Blake's best friend, at 9 o'clock to talk about this from the outsider's perspective. Of course, Wake and Rake. But Ailish, hit us with some of the stuff from the text line.
JD will be dismayed to learn that Slide Girl will probably just get a fine and probation like Chair Girl.
So here's the thing. Chair Girl's infinity worse.
This is Allison in Toronto. I'm pretty sure she's a lawyer.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Allison.
That Allison
she
in
actually
Toronto.
Was my lawyer, and now she's not my lawyer.
Why did you need a lawyer?
Well, no, she was just my like I. She's
you just
pro bono.
Had her on retainer.
Yeah, on pro bono retainer.
She's, whoa.
Yeah,
pro just bono retainer. Yeah. Do you guys, are you aware what the term retainer means?
Yeah, yeah.
You pay her $0.
Allison,
and you're my
Allison,
lawyer for
I
life.
Might need
did you not just?
When I get,
I'm
these
sorry.
Guys.
I'm sorry. Did you not just see Allison
has replied to me on Twitter before?
No, but I just mean, did you see that she sent into the show and she's letting us know that's my lawyer. She's letting me know.
Yeah, I was gonna say she knows the rules.
Okay, but I don't believe that it's pro bono. I think we're gonna come out of this later, and our boss is gonna be like, guys, love the show in the new studio, but you absolutely cannot invoice. There are no billable legal hours for the show. You can't do that.
And that's the thing about lawyers. Sneaky bunch. You think something's free. It's like, nope, even that phone call you had, bing, that cost you. So that's why she's the best lawyer in the biz for me, because she's pro bono. So shout out
Allison.
So
also, to any potential clients out there, she is not pro bono for everyone.
Yeah. That's not
that's
for
just
me.
For us.
So I hate Chair Girl with the passion of a thousand suns. I always will, because that was for Instagram clout,
she's in rap videos now.
Yeah, yeah, no, it's the worst. It's the worst thing. It's the worst thing. It's the worst thing. It's the worst thing. In fact, Allison, you're fired again because you reminded me of Chair Girl, and now I'm furious and like, why didn't you put her away for life? And that's what my lawyer does. My lawyer is proactive and goes out in the world and puts people away, even though she is a defense attorney. Defense attorney for me, proactively putting people in jail that I don't like somehow, going and settling these cases. But
I'm not your lawyer. I feel like I'm at least close to being your consigliere.
Yeah.
And I'm going to advise you to not fire your free lawyer.
No, sorry, but I can't stand for this. I can't stand for her not putting Chair Girl away for life. The lady on the airplane, I figure she wouldn't get jail time, but I figure the fine has to be significant enough that, or her community service, whatever. Whatever she ends up getting slapped with, it's got to be, significant.
And certainly no more flying.
Yeah, I guess that's probably true. That's
definitely rental banned car, from whatever baby. Airline that is.
Yeah. Yeah, tough for her.
How about some real text? So maybe we want to address the Doc Rivers running down the court halfway into Mississauga, because that's been a spicy text line segment. Let's just get that one out of the way.
So what would you say the most embarrassing moment in Raptors history is, Blake?
LeBron sipping the wine or spinning the ball
That is no longer the case. It is now fans complaining about the Doc Rivers timeout. It's actually the most, oh, so you've never seen basketball before. Like,
it's also, it's just grasping, right?
No, it's truly, truly embarrassing. When I saw it start to pop off on Twitter and in my DMs and everywhere
that's our buddy Tim, I think. I believe Tim and friends screenshotted the rule book.
It was everywhere.
I just saw people complaining about it. I didn't see who put it out there from a media standpoint, but I will just say that if the Raptors fans really think that that should have been called, then you don't know basketball. Like you don't know anything about the sport, and that's okay. A lot of people are new. They jump on to watch games for the first time during the playoffs. It is what it is, but you guys got to be kidding me. Like, I've watched basketball every day, basically.
Nick Nurse is always on the court, squatting away.
The idea that that would get called is truly the most... Had that been called, had they actually called Doc Rivers for that, and the game swung on it, it would be truly the worst call in the history of the NBA.
And the NBA league office would have to tell all the other referees, hey, this happens with every coach in every game. You got to call it all the time. So... No. I have a couple thoughts on this. Yes, by letter of the law, it's illegal. He's not allowed to do that. It's supposed to be a technical foul. It never gets called.
It was actually a great timeout.
Yeah, it never gets called. And that's the issue with it, is that it wasn't that he was like arguing or something like that. Like, he did that to get noticed, and that's not supposed to be a thing. But Nick Nurse does that all the time. A lot of coaches do that all the time.
Nick Nurse is like one of the most criminal offenders of this.
Exactly. Remember back to the bubble series against the Boston Celtics? Celtics fans were complaining several times that Nick Nurse was basically acting as a defender on the defensive end. It was 6-on-5. And you know what we said about that?
Babies.
You are being losers.
Yeah. Yeah.
That is, if you think that is what's swinging a tight playoff series or a tight playoff game, you are grasping. Because yes, by letter of the law, that's not allowed. It could have been a technical foul. It is like 142nd on the list of things would try to have go differently about that game.
It's a complete non-factor. It's a complete non-factor. It was a great timeout. Basketball coaches do it all the time. It's part of the game. It's a loud arena, and a coach is trying to call a timeout, and the referees and the officials know it. If he's doing that in the first quarter of a home game, they might blow that somehow. I don't know. Maybe they do. I've never seen, Blake, have you ever seen that get called?
No, the only times I've seen it get called is when the ref is already like very close to calling attack and is like looking for a tipping point, basically.
Yeah, but that's not him doing anything out of the ordinary. Right. That's just basketball. That's just coaching.
But Doc Rivers is a little annoying on the sideline. You want to throw these stones from this glass house about coach behavior?
Watch out for glass.
The story of the game is that the Raptors got a complete no-show from their star in Pascal Siakam.
And if you want to pick at that moment of the game, it's what the Raptors did coming out of that timeout that is a much bigger issue. And it's, do we have texts about that, I'd imagine?
A bunch of texts about why there was no coverage on the inbound, if that was kind of the determining, the nail in the coffin. Lots of people want to talk about that.
Mm-hmm.
Especially,
that's a much bigger story.
Yeah, so that is the story, leading up to it with the missed call that no one's ever heard about, less important than what happened with the inbound.
So there are a couple things with how they defended the inbound, and I'm sure Nick Nurse has justification for them, but here are the things that you can pick at. One, Fred VanVleet being on the floor there.
Why?
But you can get there with him being on the floor because maybe someone catches that ball and he can get in at their hands, right? But where he's positioned on the floor,
he's underneath the baskets. Chris Boucher should be on the floor.
He's the guy defending a lob. That didn't make sense. If anything, he should be on one of the ball handlers on the perimeter, just like in duty of make sure Maxey doesn't get the ball on the inbound kind of duty. Why you don't have anyone defend the inbounder in theory is because that lets you put an extra body on someone else to prevent them from getting the ball, or in the case of how they use Fred, drop back into the paint to protect against the rim. Again, that should have been someone else, but you've got to execute that better. On the final possession, when the inbound comes, Precious gets lost a little bit on the screen. I'm not going to hang that on any one individual defender. Embiid makes a ridiculous catch and shoot three with 0.7 on the...
A little bit on Gary Trent.
I mean, look, there's shared blame though, right?
Yeah, but he made a pretty... Out of all the guys, because I watched it over 10 times, obviously.
Because what you have to think there is there's less than a second left on the clock, and there's probably not enough time for an offensive rebound.
Mm-hmm.
There's maybe. There was, after that bucket drop, the Raptors had, 0.9 left on the clock for their own possession?
Yep.
There's probably not enough time for an offensive rebound other than a putback, which you're defending the same way you should be defending the lob in the first place. Mm-hmm. So everyone on the floor at that point should be, once the ball goes in, I'm going to the ball. I don't need to worry about switching on a screen. I don't need to do anything like that. I'm on the ball. Mm-hmm. So the combination of you took your best hands guy away from the inbound, you didn't defend the inbound, and then you also mixed up the coverage or guys, you know, just didn't execute it well on the catch. There's a lot of little things that went in the wrong direction there. And maybe it looks better with Boucher under the rim. Maybe it looks better with a guy like Boucher defending the inbound where he's long, and if you tip it, the shot clock's over.
Like, it looks better every single way.
It's a tough one.
It's you gave up a wide open look. It doesn't matter who it was to. You gave up a wide open look in the NBA. This is the best league in the world, to an all-star, to the MVP of the league, maybe, like, to close the game. It's indefensible. Like, it's as indefensible as he was indefended. Yeah. Like, it's you gave it a wide open look.
I'm not trying to defend it. I'm just going through, these are the little decision points.
No, but that's, you're not trying to defend it. You proved basically the point, which is that there are multiple problems with that play. I got to tell you, Nick Nurse got a lot of hype heading into the series. And you think about who had the quote of Nicky Nurse?
Fred.
Woof. Like, Doc
Nurse,
Rivers.
Baby.
Doc Rivers has outcoached Nick Nurse in this series, and it's unequivocal.
And the thing with Doc Rivers in playoff series has always been, and this is a good snapshot of the whole series, like we talked about the other day, that a lot of this series and a lot of the Raptors' optimism was, if this, then maybe this for Philly. And Doc Rivers, his history is that he can be a little slow and a little ineffective making adjustments when things aren't working. The criticism of Doc Rivers isn't that his base strategy isn't going to work, and if you give him 5 days off before the first playoff game, he's not going to be well game planned. It's an adjustment thing, and you completely dictated the terms of the first two games, and then, yeah, I thought he did a good job down the stretch.
Yeah, I definitely agree that the Nick Nurse conversation should be amplified. I think we're looking at a lot of, like, what's happening with the players, but Tim from Alliston has a great text here on 590-590. Keep sending them in. Siakam definitely choked last night, but I'd also like to point out that Nick Nurse failed to address the late game struggles and allowed it to go on. The offense with Siakam was stagnant and slow. The Raptors are at their best when there's motion. There was no adjustments in the clutch. Game four, I don't even want. Don't burn out Barnes' ankle under the fallacy that we can win the series.
If they're playing Barnes, there's no way that it's that there's any real risk.
No, it's a get an experience thing, and they're not going to risk it. If it was 2-1, they'd risk it.
Of course.
But he's going to play, and if he plays, then it's because they feel unbelievably confident. The one thing you could never have is to get swept by Philly, and then you have a re-aggravation to the rookie of the year. Like, there's no way they're risking that.
So if I'd need a hug if that happened.
Well, honestly, if that happens, people are going to lose jobs. Like, that's the way that would go down. It would be far less even defensible than the KD injury, the re-aggravation that he suffered to his Achilles against the Raptors.
Because at least something was on the line. Yes, that was a championship.
Exactly. And that's a superstar player who got to dictate a little bit of his timeline. They had already been cautious with it. And yes, of course. That would be indefensible. So I think if they play Barnes, I'm not going to freak out but ahead of time about them playing Barnes because I'm not in the medical room. I'll criticize if he gets hurt. But that's it. That's a play the result situation. In terms of Siakam and dictating and the stagnant of the offense, like, that's actually a place where it's hard for me to blame Nick Nurse. Like, part of me does because the offense really did. What I couldn't stand about the Raptors' offense down the stretch was that it was so just, there was nothing happening. It was all isolation and it was all just a lot of standing and not a lot of movement. And like I said to you earlier, Blake, I want to see the two-man game between Fred and Siakam with the game on the line. And a lot of the times it was like the two of them are not playing together. And it was sort of, okay, well, now we'll give OG his crack again, or now we'll force it to Precious late in the shot clock. Like, Precious Achiuwa is having a great close to his season. Mm-hmm. He shouldn't have had that many possessions down the stretch where it's late in the clock and they're asking him to attack the rim. And he did a great job because he was 9 of 11, but boy, it was pretty ugly. I think that it's the NBA, and for you to not let your star player try and dictate the moment, like, I don't know what you want them to do. Bench Siakam, that wasn't going to happen, and they're not better off for that in that situation. Like, who is on the bench that you wanted them to play?
Malachi Flynn is the next ball handler up.
Yeah, I was going to say, you want Chris Boucher in the game, like, instead? I don't think so. Siakam has to get the moment. He gets the moment, and he blew it. And, in fact, I almost feel like You want that information mm-hmm. more than anything. Like, imagine they lost that game and Siakam hadn't played. Like, yeah. come on. No, that's nonsensical. So,
yeah, like, the times DeMar got sat down the fourth in tight playoff games and stuff like that, we were talking, like...
I can't believe they're both the same age when that happened. DeMar was 28 and Siakam
and DeMar had more playoff track record as the top guy, right? Yeah. Like, that's a... There was a lot of data at that point that, hey, maybe things are going to go a little better with a Kyle run... unit that is a little more team oriented and stuff.
Boy,
I don't. This is a hard one that in terms of the stagnancy and the isolation or the run one pick and roll and get the matchup you want, because there are a lot of coaches around the NBA who in a late and close situation, especially with the lead, their priority is like a turnover kills you. A turnover has an expected shot, expected score value of zero. If you get a bad shot late in the clock, it's still going to go in sometimes. A turnover never is, and it gives the other team an easier path back. And that's how a lot of coaches manage in those situations where I know sometimes it can be really aggravating to see guys not attack until there's 9 or 8 on the shot clock.
It's not college basketball.
But that's by design sometimes because they're turnover avoidant and they're playing the clock and stuff like that. But it can be frustrating to watch for sure. And I don't think, I certainly don't think they made the most of it.
Yeah, I thought it was frustrating, but there's a lot of things I'm blaming Nick Nurse for in that series. I'm not really blaming this one on him.
No, like, it's exactly what we asked for also, right? Yeah. Like,
okay, so more Nick Nurse comments in the text line. This is an interesting one to ponder. Mm. Now I see why Nurse would coach the Lakers or any other team for that matter. It's like when Paul Maurice resigned from Winnipeg because he felt like he couldn't motivate the team anymore. Nurse knows that this current Raptor team cannot compete with Fred and Pascal as your two all-stars, a.k.a. leaders.
Okay. So I think that the Maurice comparison is not apt because there's no way Nick Nurse believes he can't get more out of this group. Like, he's Nick Nurse.
You don't have the rookie of the year who almost has a triple-double in game one and be like, I don't know about the future.
That's true.
However, the Lakers stuff did cross my mind during the game.
Yeah.
I'm just going to admit it. I'm just going to admit that it crossed my mind. When you have that kind of a series that Nick Nurse is having where it hasn't been very good, you have to at least wonder. And I said it before, it's hard for me to dismiss completely out of hand a report from a guy like Shams. If Shams puts it out there, that means people are talking about it. And Blake, you mentioned to me that there are a lot of other names out there as well, but they're not nearly as attractive as Nick Nurse. And LeBron is a horrific general manager. Like, he really is. He just made one of the worst trades of all time in acquiring Russell Westbrook, like, basically ended his career. I don't know if he's been coached by Ty Lue. He got rid of Blatt. That was a great move by him. He identified Ty Lue as a head coach. I'm guessing that he's not going to be cool with Mark Jackson showing up into town after being on hiatus for how many years has Mark Jackson been out of the game now?
Like, whenever Steve Kerr took over.
So the entire Warriors. So remember when the Warriors didn't win? Can everyone close their eyes and go back to before the Warriors won? That's when Mark Jackson coached. And the other rumor was Doc Rivers, who... If Philly goes on a little run here, Doc ain't going nowhere. Like, Doc's not going to L.A. Like, that kind of shuts the door on this.
And if they don't, do you really want that guy who at that point hasn't won in the playoffs in 15 years? Yeah.
And he's got
his coach of the year was 20 years ago. Yeah.
You got to think about it.
I thought we did a good job when the rumor first came up, like the way we discussed it on the show, laying out some of why that might be interesting. I think it's not a 0% chance thing, and it would be hard for it not to be on your mind. It's the Lakers. Like, Nick Nurse is a basketball nerd.
Yeah.
That's the, like, they're not making HBO series about every NBA franchise. Mm-hmm. There's a little bit of glamour to that, so I don't think that that's on his mind moment to moment, but like I said at the time, I don't think it's a 0% chance thing.
You know what was on my mind last night when this all ended? Was Embiid hits a three at the buzzer, to essentially eliminate the Raptors, much like Kawhi hit the three, the same gym, to eliminate the Sixers. I just thought about how after Kawhi left, there was this whole, what was so fun about that season, the run it back season, sans Kawhi and Danny, was that you felt justified and vindicated about the Raptors because they had this success, right? But Siakam choked in the playoffs then, right? And he choked in the playoffs this year.
Wait, when did Siakam choke in the playoffs?
Against the Celtics.
Oh, sorry. I thought we were still in 2019.
No. I'm saying that there was this whole thing about we don't need Kawhi. We don't need Kawhi. Right. Kawhi is not the identity of this franchise. That wasn't just a Kawhi championship.
I had a lot of, is this team better without Kawhi questions.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And I was like, no. Absolutely not.
But I thought about how in the absence of Kawhi, all this franchise has been in the playoffs is tandems that have disappointed, like all-stars that have disappointed. Even with some of the Vince Carter awesomeness that he had during his playoff stretches where it wasn't like full-blown chokes, he still went to his graduation and then choked a game seven away, like with a bad shot. DeMar and Kyle, when they were tandem together, there was some success, but it wasn't the success anybody wanted. And sure, LeBron, but DeMar's still known as one of the worst playoff performers of all time because of his tenure with the Raptors. And Kyle didn't get over that fully until he wins a championship with Kawhi. And then they exit the Kawhi era and we're back to the star tandems disappointing two playoff series in a row now with Siakam. And I go, boy, this is just a reminder for everybody that if Scotty has to be the man and he has to be a superstar, because you just don't win in this league without guys who can put pressure on the perimeter and in the paint. And they just don't have that guy.
It's a reminder too of just how hard this is, right? And I'm not saying that that's the reason here and that the Raptors history isn't true, but like you look at the Celtics and Celtics fans feel some of the same about their Tatum Brown core, right? Like it hasn't gone all the way in the playoffs yet. And it's gone better.
Thought about them too though, Blake, because that's my counter for not trading or not getting
right.
overreaction.
Look at how good and you find a Robert Williams type who just fits and you make some good moves at the margin, but
they're the same age. Yeah. And the hierarchy is clear.
Yeah.
And that's not the way when you have a 20-year-old Scotty Barnes and a 28-year-old Pascal Siakam.
They also changed coach and GM.
Yeah. So it's like I made that connection and I went, you know, this is why you don't change and you don't just trade a star for the sake of trading a star and you don't abandon a philosophy.
I look around the league and in the playoffs right now, there are a lot of teams or guys who have this about them, right? Like that Celtics team hasn't got where they want to. Until last year, that was the book on Giannis and the Bucks. That... You know, you're going to...
Kyrie. But Giannis was winning MVPs. Like, yes. There's a difference between
Kyrie
a guy who's
Kyrie doesn't
an MVP.
Really have it because Kyrie has had one of the biggest playoff moments of all time. Uh-huh. But KD gets a little bit of it because his playoff successes are with the Warriors. Mm-hmm. And Philly is absolutely in a spot where they're in that situation. And then you look at the West, Utah is very much in that same spot.
But actually, I think Utah and the Raptors are the parallel.
Yeah.
In terms of a team where you go... Hey, how is this going to get any better?
Yeah, I'm like 2 months away from being able to process Rudy Gobert trade rumors. I don't...
Oh, that's in the text line.
I don't want the... Yeah.
I thought about that too.
Yeah.
I don't...
This is a big difference between, hey, what's the basketball fit? And hey, I want to enjoy watching 82 games a year fit?
I agree, and I can't stand Rudy Gobert, but I thought about it. Mm-hmm. It did cross my mind, just like a lot of different people where you go... He's probably going to be available this offseason. And what would that trade look like? What would that deal look like where the Raptors get their center and Pascal? Because Pascal and Donovan Mitchell would... Like, if I'm Utah, I want that trade done a billion times more than I'm from the Raptors' standpoint. But
I want some sweetener in that, which
course,
is crazy to say
sweetener?
For a guy who's a defensive player of the year every year. But yeah, like, it's an onerous contract for Rudy Gobert because he necessitates very specific building.
Yeah.
Like, and
the thing is that the Raptors kind of have that building.
And you'd probably jump right to 1-2 in defense?
No, you're number one defense.
Yeah.
There's no question about it. All of a sudden, you'd have OG Anunoby, Scotty Barnes, Fred VanVleet, and, like, it wouldn't be outside the realm of possibility that you could have, like, four guys deserving of being on different All-NBA teams, defensive teams. Like, that's what you'd be looking at there. Plus, all of a sudden, you know, you have a guy who's in the paint who can stop Giannis... Or at the rim, like we saw what the Gasol thing did for them against Embiid. We saw what that did for against Giannis.
Drive a guy into size.
I'm just saying, I don't think it's insane. Like, I think that some people will put that out there as that's insane. I don't think it is.
I don't think it's insane. Yeah. I think
it's unattractive, though. It's unattractive.
The hard part about it is if you move off of one of Siakam or VanVleet because of the timeline misalignment,
I don't
it
think you're moving
then,
off VanVleet.
I know. So it is then you do have to accept a little bit that a trade for someone like a Rudy Gobert, who is 29 years old and be 30 by the time next season starts, and has 4 years left on his contract after this year at $40 million a year, you got to be sure that that gets you all the way to where you're going before he declines, because the back part of that contract is probably going to be ugly.
Yeah, it's probably going to be ugly. I would just look at it and go... And we'll probably do, because this is what...
We got months ahead.
Hey, also, if you're mad about doing Pascal trade rumors, play better. That's how this happens. You disappoint to that degree again, and this is what happens. Like, you end up in the rumor mill and discussions about your future with the franchise. they get sparked up. Because again, there's some real rationale behind it after another crumble like that. Sometimes guys do need a fresh start, and I'm not saying that's necessarily the case with Siakam. There's two lines of thought with it, and we're just discussing both. But if you did the Rudy Gobert trade, it's an excellent trade for Utah, obviously, because you get a better player, frankly, in my opinion. You get someone who can be the 1B next to Donovan Mitchell as a closing scorer, mm-hmm. someone who can play in a two-man game with him. If you have Bogdanovich when you're with them, you're thinking, wow, that's a really nice fit too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, your concern there would be that right now their defense is good because of Rudy Gobert, period, yeah. and they don't have a lot of other good defenders.
But they just
Siakam is a really yeah. good defender and, yeah. and like a near all NBA defense level defender,
yep.
but he's not a defensive system unto himself.
No.
So you'd better hope that that's going to work offensively. I think it yeah. would.
And I think
that's
it would
a
too.
Dynamic one-two.
Here's the thing. I think Utah does that trade without any reservation.
Like I said, you're asking for more back if you're Toronto.
But I don't know what that looks like because
it's tough because it's probably pick equity because you're trying to make up for the fact that Gobert's contract's worse, right? It's longer, he's older, it's more money.
I just don't know what that pick equity looks like if you're Utah because if I'm them, I'm going, well, we're not giving you a lot for this.
Yeah,
like, this
it's a hard sell to pay in picks to move off one of the best defenders of the last couple of years.
Not only that, I'm pretty sure that did they not move a pick in the in their trade this deadline? Did they not do something that altered what they were doing? Like they did a little flip maneuver?
Yeah, they owe their pick to Memphis this
year. That's right.
So, but that's from an older trade.
Okay, so
I don't know what they did this year.
Either way, I knew they didn't own their pick this year, and they did something at the deadline.
Oh, they traded away future Ingles. Seconds.
Yeah, because they got off the deal. Ingles money.
But those are like 2027, 2028.
Either way, I'm just saying they don't have their pick this year, which is the crappier draft,
And they owe their 2024 first to Oklahoma City as well.
Yeah, see, there you go. So it's not exactly like they have a bunch of picks to give up, nor would they want to, and there's nothing around the fringes that they're trading. Like, I don't know. It's just, it's... There's a framework, but I don't know how it ends up getting done.
A third team is probably the answer where other pieces are going out.
But. Yeah, but either way, it's something that, again, crossed my mind. What else?
Is it maybe something to chew on?
Yeah, you know what? It's time for something to chew on. Brought to you by Great Canadian Meats.
Yum, yum, yum.
There it is.
Almost missed it, Vic.
Well, Vic's on a different board, so he's not fired.
Actually, you know, a couple people messaged me being like, do you do that live every day or is it recording?
She does. No.
So
she times it out.
Wouldn't you like to know?
She times it out. I'm going to do my something that you want on the Toronto Blue Jays because we haven't talked about them enough. George Springer last night, he takes a fastball to his wrist. Turns out the x-rays are negative, forearm, wherever you want to play, say. I don't know what it is. Like maybe he misses today's game. I'm guessing he misses today's game, but big sigh of relief because boy, you were a few seconds from Tapia being at the Tapia order, and you didn't really want
that. He's electric lately.
I would say that if that
it was for the Tapia order, that you missed.
Yeah, it was.
I get it.
It's okay. Yeah, it's all right.
Here's something to you. How many different ways can Raimel Tapia get on base without getting a hit or a walk? Because he's now got the steal first on a strikeout and the catcher's interference.
Oh, he's got a home run.
That home run he hit though. I think that's the worst pitch that's been thrown in the history of baseball. Like, honestly, it's like you got Tapia down two strikes.
It's also the most Fenway Park home run. Like, I've sat in those seats, the pesky pole seats, and like a lazy fly ball comes in on you quick.
I know, but you saw the pitch.
Yeah, it was
It's like a high heater there is that's putting Tapia in the dugout, and instead you threw that. And I don't know if the catcher called for that, and they just, like, after the game, they're breaking down the film, they're looking at the start, and he's going, I can't believe this just happened. Like, I can't believe we threw this pitch. I've literally seen Ben Nicholson-Smith in a suit throw a better pitch than that. Like, I'm not even kidding. So the something to chew on here, though, is I actually thought it was a kind of a sneaky moment for Bo and for Biggio in that game. Tapia, I just think, is what he is. I'm not reading anything into that bomb, because, again, the pitch was horrific, and it was a pesky pull bomb, but Biggio comes up later in the inning, and the guy doesn't have a hit all season long, and he finally gets one. And it's against Nick Pivetta, who obviously stinks. No offense to Canada. No offense to anybody listening to the show that probably has some affiliation to him.
Real tough.
I just thought it was a really good spot for him. And Bo Bichette, 7-14 versus Pivetta last year. His velocity's down this year. He comes up, and he has another big hit. I just think that's good for the team's confidence in the direction that they're going. And the reason why I bring this up and why it's something to chew on is I know that some people think that I'm a reactionary baseball guy because we, one, do a four-hour radio show where we have to have opinions and takes off of these games. And you get people who come on and go, it's early. And I saw Siddle during the pregame show yesterday, and he's doing the I'm not concerned about the Blue Jays thing, too. And I go, I agree. There's no one saying that the Blue Jays are, you're making wide-sweeping analysis of them right now. These are opinions on the moment. But the Jays started last season in the first month 500. They're a 500 ball club. They missed the postseason by a game. They missed it by a game. They were 12-12. Like, a slow start really hurt the Blue Jays last year. And so their ability to get out of the gates here and just be a little better. Like, we talk a lot about, hey, where are the ways this Blue Jays team can improve? Because we agree that losing Semien and replacing him with Chapman is not an upgrade, right? So is Vlad going to have a better season? Is Bo going to have a better season? Okay, the pitching staff might be better, but don't forget, they lost a Cy Young guy, and Mats was incredible, and now you don't even have Ryu in here, so maybe that's going to be tough, too. How do you show improvement from a year ago? Well, the bullpen can be better, which it has been already. It's been lights out, but you got to win some of these games early. Like, they still count in the standings. So, yeah, I don't think that you take the results and you make wide-sweeping analysis over it, but the wins still matter just as much as they do now as later in the year, and not having that first month start 12-12 and finishing that thing above 500, which is where they're at right now, is still important, and that's something to chew on.
Yeah, they're 7-5 now,
yep.
And that's a good spot to be. You've got a couple tough weeks ahead with a lot of Astros, Red Big Sox, win. Yankees.
Mm-hmm. But when you play those teams again and you know you started strong, you feel a little bit of momentum and you feel a bit more positive.
It's a lot of series where if it's a four-gamer, you're saying we got to split, and if it's a three-gamer, you kind of got to take it because you can't afford to stack too many one and twos. And it makes today's game pretty big to try to take that series from Boston.
Today's game 1 or 1:30? 1:30. Today, 1:30 on Sportsnet.
Nice.
You can catch the game. It'll be on the Fan as well. I'm sure Blair and Barker got you all covered on it. Well, let's take a break. Are we doing the same thing with the Leafs and Lightning as we did with Raptors Sixers? That's next on the Fan Morning Show. JD Blake and Ailish, Sportsnet 5-9 of the Fan.
Everything Raptors before and after the games. The Raptor Show with Will Liu. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 5-9 of the Fan. Keep the texts rolling. Keep the DMs and the tweets rolling at JD Bunkus, at Ailish Forfar, and at Blake Murphy ODC, or at eBlake Murphy on Instagram. One of the toughest parts of this Raptor series has been feeling like we overhyped them, that we overstated their chances in the series. And by we, I mean the collective we is in the city of Toronto, as in the basketball community at large, however you want to put it. This was widely viewed as the friskiest series outside of, I guess...
Lester Shaq.
Well, yeah.
All-time bad rescinding, by the way.
Yeah, he should have just owned it at this point.
Except for, here's the thing, the way social media works is that's just going to get put out there by Sixers fans over and over and over, and no one's going to know about the rescinding.
Well, it's like yesterday, Charles Barkley guarantees the Leafs are going to win a playoff series, and everyone's like, oh, that dooms the Leafs. It's like, ooh, Barkley actually has a pretty good NBA playoff track record recently.
Okay, well,
picked the Bucks to win it all last year, was big on the Raptors in 2019.
Okay.
Maybe you're okay, Toronto Maple Leafs.
So this is kind of where I'm going, though, which is that, as my friend Sam McKee put it, the Raptors got too sexy. They got too sexy, and that is
a story of my life.
Yeah. Well, you know who else talked about this? Chris Mad Dog Russo with us with the Blue Jay season, right? It is a real thing. The team that gets a little too much hype, oftentimes, this is just in general, when there's a consensus about something in sports, red flag. When it's like NBA or NFL draft, right? NFL draft, this happens all the time. Like, this is the consensus. Didn't work out that way. This is the consensus in the NBA in terms of an upset pick. Oh, guess what? The upset team didn't end up pulling it out. People get in their echo chambers. People start to see the same thing. They start repeating the same thing, and they start doing it. And I'm just saying, right now, the Toronto Maple Leafs remind me a little bit of that. And it's weird to think of it this way because the Leafs are always the team that people are doubting. The Leafs always have the fan anxieties of things. So maybe that's just what I'm doing. I'm undercutting it with a little bit of fan anxiety, and I'm not letting myself be happy. But I saw this stat yesterday, or I heard this stat yesterday on Real Kipper and Bourne. They had on a guy named Mike Kelly, big stats guy. He says that odd man rush percentage since the trade deadline. Leafs are first in the league, plus 24. That was a big problem spot, if you remember, for the Toronto Maple Leafs. You know who was dead last?
Tampa Bay Lightning.
You got it, kid. Minus 24.
Kiddo.
Minus 24. So polar opposite ends of the spectrum with the same number, right? Everyone is looking at tonight's game, myself included, going, Vasilevsky's got bad numbers now. He's looking human. They got bad rush defense, and they got a goalie that doesn't make up for that anymore. Tampa, if you guys have paid attention to them at all, you've been watching any of their games, you know what they look? A little slow. You know what? The Leafs are not slow. All of a sudden, this is looking like a bad matchup for Tampa. All of a sudden, the fan base getting a little frisky. All of a sudden, people are feeling a little emboldened, a little empowered, feeling like the Leafs are sort of sexy. All of a sudden, Charles Barkley's on national television saying the Leafs are going to win a playoff series. It's feeling a little too sexy, and that's all. I just when I watched Pascal Siakam yesterday, all I could think was, please don't let me have an offseason where Pascal Siakam crumbles and then Mitch Marner does the same.
Oh, might we have to move?
Yeah, I think so.
And do the radio in, I don't know, La France.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll do Rudy Gobert trade ideas in La France.
We'll just do F1 in La France.
You have to build that trade around Rudy. You got to build that team around him. He's got to get a chance. He's got to get a better chance than
George St. Pierre, the NBA analyst here.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly. Yeah.
I don't know what you were going for specifically, but that was a really good GSP.
Yeah, yeah. That's French guy. Okay. That's the only one I can do because I've been doing GSP forever. I just want to be the best GSP I can be. That's him. Okay, so are we feeling a little too overconfident about the Leafs right now? Because coming into tonight, I got to tell you, I'm not afraid of the Lightning. And
no.
I don't like that I don't feel afraid of the Lightning.
Well, we talked about this a little while ago about who would you want to match up against in the playoffs. And honestly, I don't know if I'm scared of the Lightning either. I think that I was more scared of the Panthers, maybe, but I feel like
Panthers
anymore.
Would be my number one choice.
Yeah,
if I could get a team, it would
things
be the Panthers.
Things have shifted rapidly since the trade deadline, and I feel like the Leafs are on this high. Things are clicking. The Geo trade seems to be the missing puzzle piece. Jack's back. You're getting contributions from all four lines from people you didn't expect. So I think that fact is really interesting. I didn't know that. So shout out to Mike Kelly for bringing that on. But I'm not scared of the Tampa Bay Lightning either. I mean, other than Vasilevsky being some guy that can really steal a game here and there, right now it's not looking as fiery as it had been pre-trade deadline.
I'll tell you what, I am terrified of Vasilevsky because...
Well, yeah, no, he's like that. He's the piece that you can't really...
And I'll just say this. If Mike Kelly were a real stats guy of the people, the stats he was referencing wouldn't be behind a paywall, so I could bring them up and give us a little more context. I would never ask someone to pay for content. That's not the thing.
Yeah.
No, so this is a hard one for me because I don't see a ton of parallels with the Raptors necessarily because the Leafs are the Sixers in this series more so, right? Like the Leafs are the team that you think you can punch in the mouth and they'll combust or they'll fall apart. They're psychologically fragile. They've done this in the playoffs before.
I would just say that I'll backtrack a little bit. I'm scared of the Tampa Bay Lightning because of their playoff success. Right now, regular season is regular season. Leafs are looking really, really great.
But my point even earlier
was
that
their experience is something it's hard to deny.
The Raptors aren't the Raptors, though. The Raptors are now Kawhi. You know, like the Raptors championship is quickly becoming Kawhi. Like the identity of this, like...
No, Kawhi and Mark and Kyle and Danny Green, who has a ring with everyone.
He's got his ring.
I know...
It is one of the best individual playoff performances we'll ever see.
Yes. All I'm saying is go look at, for example, some of the stats from those playoff series.
Sure. And go look at 70% of Stanley Cup champions who get goalies who just play above their head for a couple weeks.
Of course. Just my only point here is that I don't feel like the Raptors are a winning organization because they won a championship and that Philly is these big loser organization. Like in terms of trying to make the parallels between these two, my only parallel here is just simply that the team that gets all the hype, the team that gets all the traction, oftentimes just be leery of that. And right now it feels like the Leafs are getting a lot of attention, a lot of traction. And I don't know what I want to see tonight is how these two teams look against one another. But also what I can't wait to ask Dave Vanderchuk is what are we seeing with Tampa right now? Are we seeing a team that's starting to wear down because they've been to back-to-back Stanley Cup playoffs, because they've had this long, big wear and tear on their bodies and that maybe they are a step slower, maybe they are a step more vulnerable? Or are we seeing a group of guys that are LeBron Jamesing us right now where they're going, we don't care about regular season. The standings have been set for forever.
They won the President's Trophy 1 year and then blew it. So maybe they don't even want to be up the top.
There's no playoff race for them. Like, maybe they actually are in some form of self-preservation mode. I know that's not as much of a thing in hockey, but maybe it is when you win back-to-back cups.
Yeah, and look, that takes a toll, right? There's a reason there aren't really dynasties in hockey is because the game demands too much of you over those 2 months. Yeah. Now, where I was going with my...
One win is a dynasty for the Leafs, by the way.
One round win.
Yeah, one first round win, and this group becomes remembered like they're a dynasty.
So where I was going with that is why it's difficult for me to make the parallel is that a lot of the Raptors' optimism and trendiness was disbelief in the 76ers. But if you dug into the numbers, it was still, well, Philly's a little better, and maybe you can do this, maybe you can do that, maybe you can do this, maybe you can close the gap this way. Nobody said, hey, the Raptors are a better team than the 76ers. You look at all the little numbers that I look at for the Leafs, and
I thought you'd do one big number.
Yeah, a bunch of little ones, too. But this is the thing. I wouldn't even be able to pick one big number for today because the Leafs are better than Tampa in, like, every category when you look at it. And I know we've learned our lesson with the regular season doesn't matter as much, and playoff hockey's different, but it is difficult for me to think that people having some confidence is entirely wrong when statistically, like, by every cut, the Leafs have outperformed the Lightning by a pretty significant degree, and the Leafs are among the best teams in the league, and all of that is held up when you play against good competition. I know that there are the anxieties and stuff, and it'll seem silly if the Leafs get bounced in round one because hockey's hard and hockey series are not, you know, seven games isn't enough sometimes, and I don't see quite the parallels because the Leafs have more, like, actual evidence in their favor.
Listen, Blake, the parallel is that if you're a tortured Toronto sports fan, that the one Raptors win didn't change things.
But you're not, tortured as a Raptors fan. Like, the title's too recently. But Toronto in general, if you're a Leaf fan, it didn't change much. It just, the Leafs have actual evidence in their favor, which will make it way more painful if it doesn't work out.
The thing about sports parallels is they're the easiest thing to pick holes in, okay? So stop it. Stop picking holes in my parallels because they're very hard to make and that they're usually pretty bad, but you try to fit it into a narrative box. I don't know. Watching the Raptors lose this way and watching Siakam crumble this way, it makes me think about how the Blue Jays missed the game or the playoffs by a game last year and how that felt plucky and fun, but how that's not going to feel plucky and fun if they don't make the playoffs this year. It's really not going to feel very plucky and fun all of a sudden, and how, the Leafs just represent so much hope. And Blake, you're right. I guess what I'm saying here is you can take all this data and you can put it down and say every reason, Leaf fans, you should have faith. And yet every year we're reminded that the playoffs are so different that a lot of the information that we gather over a course of 82 games can become so meaningless immediately. And that's what's so crushing.
This is their best season in a very long
time. Exactly. That's my point, is that they are good. I do believe in them. I do have all this confidence. I don't know how you could ignore any of this. And then they get into a series, and Vasilevsky goes from the 908 guy that's been the All-Star break to a 945 guy in a postseason series.
This is what I want to ask to you guys to kind of wrap this thought up is, other than Vasilevsky getting back to best goalie in the world status for a playoff series, which is absolutely on the table, is there something about the way the Lightning have played or the way the Leafs have played that is tangible for you in terms of this will be different in a playoff series?
Yes, they are consistently beating hard teams. They had the best record in the NHL as of last week when I heard this stat in beating hard teams. They have the worst record in terms of beating bad teams. Well, they're only going to play hard teams in the playoffs. They're not going to play Montreal Canadiens or the Buffalo Sabres. So that is something tangible. They're able to elevate their game when it matters. That is exactly what the playoffs is about. So that's a tangible thing for me.
I just don't think it matters in the regular season. That's my point.
Well, it might not matter.
We have to
Tampa.
Find something to talk about
this
in terms
of Leafs, what she's saying. Right. Like, that's a Leaf stat.
But I'm saying those games like where they're playing against the Lightning might not matter to the Lightning.
That's what I mean.
They might be good data against a team like Florida that they care a lot about the regular season this year, a team like Colorado that's still on the way up. But Tampa is the tough question here of, like, are they sleeping? And if so, what changes in the playoffs? And other than, you know, the big thing other than Vasilevsky is you just open up the Lightning roster page. It's like, there are a lot of good players. They're going to have the best goalie and the best defenseman in the series.
So, you know what the frustrating part in all of this is? And we always break this down. We do these things, a little micro analysis. You know, Blake's got his little numbers, his little baby numbers. And he's got his big numbers. And, you know, Ailish has
embryonic numbers.
But, like, hockey, here's the truth about what's going to happen with the series. They're both really good teams. And they're going to go into a postseason series. And it's going to come down to a couple of bounces and a couple of weird things.
Pat Maroon, you know, no longer there, but him doing those things he did.
Something
weird will happen.
Some weird stuff's going to happen. A bad goal is going to go in. A bounce is going to go a certain way. A call is going to get missed or made. Like, I think Leafs Lightning goes 7 games. And that's the thing you need to strap in for.
That's fun.
I think, it depends who you ask. I got to tell you, the day of that 7th game or the couple of days of that 7th game.
You can't eat. It's going to be miserable.
It's going to be miserable. It's truly
please
like,
be on a weekend so that we don't have to do 4 hours of us just sitting here hand-holding circle. Send your texts in. What are you throwing up today?
I actually hope it does fall on a weekday if it happens, just from the standpoint of I don't want to sit and digest with it because I'll come in apathetic if the Leafs end up losing on the Monday. Like, I can't believe it. Who cares? Life is meaningless. It's all, it's into the void we go. But yes, I just think that they're two good teams, and that I guess my only point in a lot of this is simply that as much as we are trying to take from this and set up these two teams, and as much as we might even take from a game like tonight, I think the Leafs are the better team this year. I really do. But I just don't know what that means in terms of a playoff series against a team that's won back-to-back seasons and might have hit the...
Probably means nothing.
Yeah, probably means nothing. Probably all these... Like, remember when we started the year and we went, all this regular season stuff is meaningless? And then I said yesterday, we've been having all this fun and Leaf fans do this thing every year because the media hub is here where we spend time and time and time on every little story from Wayne Simmonds and Kyle Clifford to the starting goaltending in Austin Matthews. Every single player on this roster has had a moment where they were like in the eye of the media. Yeah. Even Alex Kerfoot, remember at the beginning of the year, was like, is Alex Kerfoot underrated? No,
Blackwell,
he's Alex Kerfoot.
This is the Blackwell fan club.
Yes, they've done 8 different defensemen. Everyone has had the center of attention, right? I joked, I went on Calgary radio the other day. I'm like, you guys all know who Timothy Liljegren is. Like, you know who he is.
Who is the Flames' 8th defenseman?
No one knows. Me. And will they ever know? This is a mystery of the universe, like here.
He's
like,
probably in that really cool Calgary Hitman jersey, unless that's WHL and not AHL.
Someone just can get so mad at you for implying that Timothy Liljegren is the Leafs' 8th defenseman, by the way. You're dead. You're Twitter dead.
Well,
now.
No, someone put out fancy stats in support of Justin Hall yesterday that I saw, and I was like, you know what?
Yeah.
We're going to throw these out now because it doesn't feel that way. No.
Numbers only work for a lot of the internet when it supports what they want to believe.
My entire gimmick.
Yeah, I know. I've noticed. it's the Fan Morning Show. Let's take a break. Let's bring in Michael Grange and say, what now? What comes next? JD Blake and Ailish, Sportsnet 590 The Fan.